Gerald Tooks is with me today from a conversation that talks about the establishment of Bond Elementary School, contributing sizably to the welfare of Tallahassee, including the Tooks Hotel. In the second hour, we're going to listen to Jerry Parrish from the Florida Chamber of Commerce, systemic racism and how oftentimes economic policies work against us. So stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Certainly in Tallahassee, the evidence of segregation based in a racist point of view, those institutions that encompassed that point of view, carried out in policies, those are in fact part of our history without any mistaking the fact that it was intentional. Remnants of that thinking remain in some places in our community even now, whether the consequences are intentional or not. I mean, how can we say then that Tallahassee, as it has been said, is so highly segregated? And if you recall the works of Richard Florida from some years back, that's what got everybody all buzzed up about this claim. No, wait a minute. That's not the real Tallahassee. That's not who we really are. But then when you start talking to some of the people who've grown up in those neighborhoods, like our own commissioner, Jeremy Matlow, you find out that, yeah, see, there is a disparity. Now, are those disparities related to ethnicity and race? Are they related to income and, affluence? Those neighborhoods that are more affluent than have the sidewalks and have higher property values and thus have more property taxes being paid to fund those schools in those neighborhoods. Okay, is that about black or white, or is that about rich or poor, or both? We're going to have Jerry Parrish with us in the second hour. He is one of the chief economists over there at Florida Chamber of Commerce. He'll talk with you at length about, if you want to call it, unintended consequences. But when it happens, it certainly doesn't feel unintentional. I mean, you're relying on aid from the government. You're relying on support for child care. And you have an opportunity to take a better paying job, so it happens, and Mr. Parrish will bring us up to date on this. But the income from that particular better job being offered isn't enough to cover all that will be required of that person in providing child care and all the rest of it. Whereas if the person remains dependent upon public welfare, well, the child care is provided. How does that happen? Well, in the In the words of Mr. Parrish, we'll find out that it really has to do with what he calls falling off the cliff. That having to do with the parameters that are instituted by the programs being administered by federal bureaus and state bureaus. In very simple terms, if the rules are such that you and I can't get beyond being dependent on that public dollar, because in doing so, we forfeit whatever benefit we may receive for the sake of this other job, and then in fact, the incentives are not there. In fact, it's a disincentive for me because of the way the rules are written. So then you start asking yourself, well, who wrote the rules? Why are those the standards? Why can't there be a graduated or some kind of system in which you don't give up every benefit you have just to take this higher paying job? Again, higher paying may be a better situation for you personally because it's maybe it's a career opportunity that you'd really like to pursue, but the cost is too high. It's a very odd contradiction. So when you and I talk about systemic racism or institutionalized racism, I mean, that's just that's one example, but it's a clear example. It's easier maybe for you and I to get our head around what that feels like. Or you live in neighborhoods where there are no sidewalks. And yet, you know, your neighbors to the north or the east of you, they're sporting some pretty nice looking boulevards and sidewalks to boot. And so where does that kind of disparity originate? How deeply is that entrenched, not just in public policy, and we'll say for Leon County and Tallahassee, policies that show up in places like Benton Hills. Remember here last year when we had the property association head of that whole neighborhood, and he came in and sat down with us talking about bylaws, I suppose they were, that were part of the whole Benton Hills Association. I mean, and it's clear they don't have a neighborhood association. This was a property association. And one of the rules was that black people were not allowed. African-American ownership was not permitted. Where did that come from? Well, it came from the period of time we're talking about in, I guess, 38, maybe, late 30s, early 40s, when segregation was the rule of the day for most communities, many communities. And FHA loans made it very clear that they were not going to provide underwriting for black Americans. Not going to happen. And so you're the developer or whatever, you're setting up the neighborhood, you're trying to sell property and get financing approved for these families that are buying property in your development. Okay, so here we have another example of where rules are set in place. Now, those were rules that really had been forgotten about. Okay, so in a contemporary perspective, you know, Benton Hills and the neighbors around the area there, and there are black families living there because those rules were no longer applied. In fact, given the civil rights legislation of the late 60s, it's illegal. You can't do that. But yet here we remain this artifact from, you know, several decades gone by. And it so happened that this African-American woman purchased property in Benton Hills. She got sent the set of documents, and she's reading through it, and she's like, what? Where does this come from? Now, again, it didn't impede her progress as a property owner, but for our sake, for the sake of this conversation, it really has to do with the kinds of remnants, I suppose you'd say, the kinds of artifacts or the kinds of language, the kind of statements that are left behind. And unless they're directed, unless they're addressed, they could have import. Is that really how we want to handle this? Is that really the whole point? Is that we just kind of leave these things standing because it's really just not that important?
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're taking the opportunity today to bring a few moments from earlier conversations. Gerald Tooks will be with us in this last half of this hour of the show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And if you haven't done this, you can join in by emailing us topics@tallahasseetalks.com, topics at. Great way to share an idea, a topic, or a guest you'd like us to consider. If you haven't done this already, go to tallahasseetalks.com. You can find archives of all the shows we've done for you in the last now, 9 years, since 2011, we've been on air with this effort to bring us all together around the things that matter most, I suppose, a good way to put that. Gerald Tooks is part of that history, his family, responsible for the formation of Bond Elementary School, they're back in the 30s, I suppose, 35, somewhere in there. And the very now well-known National Historic Register hotel, the Tooks Hotel. Does he say Tooks or Tooks? Tooks. Tooks, yeah. Always have to be careful about that. Pronunciations, right? Family names and all. Well, Gerald is a descendant of that fine family and carrying on in his own way with his own business. All I'm trying to say there is in a further example of this Tooks family contributing to the welfare of the community and always having this sort of, what would you call it, risk-taking, exploratory, forefront kind of thinking, groundbreaking kind of contributions. As he's going to talk with you about this award that his father was granted because of his work. Anyway, I'll leave that to the conversation upcoming. Meanwhile, I've got some announcements for you regarding some of our other friends around town. CityWalk, particularly CityWalk Urban Mission, with a few news announcements here. Well, it so happens that the folks with CityWalk have been having to deal with some pretty tough situations involving homeless people and some of those people who they've discovered because of being laid off, falling into even further isolation. And one individual who was over 60 years old, and he was in a high-risk category, led to chronic depression and relapse. And the only real socialization opportunity he had was going to work and going to church. Couldn't do either of those things. In any case, they were able to reach out to this individual and bring some aid and assistance. And I'm reading here from a few notes. This is directly from the administrative staff with Urban Mission. They're saying this: our city is hurting along with the nation, and the pain is evident in recent protests. Our job is to shine the love and the brightness that we bring when people are hurting, or they're angry, or they feel distanced. They feel unheard or unloved. So Urban Mission, in keeping with their broader mission, trying to bring some encouragement, uplifting music, and even some rather enjoyable family time, where, for example, they have a dinner and drive-in movie. That's a cool thing. It's an outdoor movie on a 32-foot viewing screen. And it's at their location, City Walk Urban Missions, up there on North Monroe. So you get a 3-topping pizza from Munchies when you buy your ticket. You can drive up there with your family and watch. Looks like they've got the Avengers Endgame. That's kind of cool. That's coming up tomorrow. Or later. Let's see, what is this? June. Yeah, it'll be next Saturday, June 20th, 1105 North Monroe Street. So, if you want to get your tickets, you better call them. Let's see if I've got a phone number here for you. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Well, you can go to their website, City Walk. I believe that's right, citywalk.com. Or let's go this way, citywalkthrift.com. I think that's probably a better place for you to show up on a website, citywalkthrift.com. Here's that phone number, 528-3909. Tickets are limited in numbers, only 30 spots available, so you better call and see if they still have some tickets there for you. One of their most popular sales is baby and kids' clothes. Fill a bag for $5. Now that's happening today and again on the 27th of this month. So that's a cool thing. They've overstocked on baby stuff and kids' stuff. So you can go up there and you fill up a bag and it only costs you $5. How cool is that? Anyway, that's our good friends at City Walk. Good news there. Department of Economic Opportunity with another bit of good news, announcing a $10 million additional funding to help rebuild Florida business. Department of Economic Opportunity announced, this is back from earlier this week, a $10 million program in state and federal funds now available, entitled the Rebuild Florida Business Loan. And how do you go about finding out where you go for that kind of stuff? Well, OEV4Business, that's forbusiness.org, would be the place to go. So OEV4Business.org, and you can find out all about this funding opportunity. Rebuild Florida Business Loan can provide up to $500,000 in financing if you need to purchase inventory or if you need to provide working capital, even startup loans for machinery, equipment, construction or renovation. All kinds of opportunities there for you. Again, that website is OEV4Business.org. org. All right, folks, that's what I have for you at the moment. Stay with me. We've got Gerald Tooks coming up right after the break.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So for many of us, the Tooks name carries a lot of meaning, a lot of significance. It is a name that has found its way into the fabric of Tallahassee for several generations, right? Seems fitting to me. We have Gerald Tooks with us today. Gerald, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Brian.
I'm glad you're here because in having the opportunity to celebrate Martin Luther King Day this last Monday, it set the tone for all of us, I think. It's a good way of getting started in this time of the year, reflecting upon the contributions of African Americans, the organizations, right, that
right.
have been really formidable.
Mm-hmm.
The NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Foundation
conference
mm-hmm. right? Organizations that have purposed to not just advance the cause of Black Americans, but really have worked on behalf of all of us. I take that perspective that if I am recognizing the freedom of you
mm-hmm.
as an American who happens to be Black,
right.
I'm giving a gift back to myself because freedom is freedom, man.
Absolutely.
And if not everybody can be free, then nobody's really free.
I totally agree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So there you go. There's my contribution to the discussion, political philosophy or whatever you want to call it. Cultural advancement, perhaps, would be a good topic of concern here. The manner in which a guy like your father,
uh-huh.
who at a time, some 47, longer than that, maybe.
Correct, yeah.
50 or 60 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Started out in business.
Mm-hmm.
Did well for himself at a time when we were still mired in this sort of archaic way of dividing ourselves, right, between Black and white.
Yes. I mean, you're talking about during a time when segregation was still, you know, prevalent. 67, when he was still in the school system. We were now integrating schools.
Yeah. He was a principal.
He was a principal.
For which school? I can't remember.
He started out at a rural school called Barrel Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he moved into town. At the time, it was Southwest. When he came into town, they changed the name to Pineview. Which
I remember
is over
you
on Lake.
Telling us that they had created these schools and they hadn't even come up with names.
Exactly.
So they were alpha designated, right?
ABC. And I went to C, which was Oak Ridge.
Cool. How cool.
Yeah. So, and at that time, he always wanted to go into business. His mom thought that was just, you know, kind of a far reach dream to be in business. I thought that he should be a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a thing for, you know, black folks of prominence in a sense to become doctors, lawyers.
Right.
Teachers. And don't
get
me wrong.
Your grandmother, in her own right, was formidable.
Exactly.
She founded which school? Was it she?
Bond Elementary.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, she was an educator.
Wow.
And then my grandfather, you know, was a cook for several governors.
Yeah.
And the last being Governor Collins.
And that's something.
And so...
Now, your father pursued, regardless of his mother's objections, he said, no, I'm going to be in business.
He did.
And he pursued real estate.
He did. He brought him several pieces of land. Hmm. And you know, from there, he began developing property.
And this would have been in the early 60s or late 50s?
Mid-60s.
Mid-60s?
Yeah,
okay.
Mid-60s.
Right.
By 1970, he actually built his first apartment.
Cool.
And in 73, he basically left the school. You know, he didn't retire because he was too young to retire. He basically resigned his position as a school principal and went full steam ahead in business for himself. Mm-hmm. And that's when he formed J&T Properties, Inc., as well as Tooks Realty. J&T Properties, Inc. was more of a real estate investment.
Yeah.
Tooks Realty was the real estate division that... you know, acquired and rented and sold property. And he had a pretty pretty nice group of realtors that worked with him during that time
period. And for that period of time, and you mentioned the challenges of living in a segregated community in the South, for him to just be in business, first of all, was remarkable, and to be successful in that business. And it seems to me that he laid out for a lot of other people then a sort of path so as to say, look, it can be done. I'm doing it.
Well, yeah, it can be done. And the mere fact that he did try to open doors for, you know, other people to get into business. Not only that, other people, you know, he served on and was one of the founders of Marine State Bank during that time period. And, you know, the opportunity for people to borrow money, you know, and to serve in that capacity in that board, you know, for other businesses now to develop the economic opportunities that were presented, you know, not only for himself, but for other folks.
Wow.
And then, you know, also going on to serve on other boards like the Tallahassee Memorial Hospital. You know, he served on the TCC, Tallahassee Community College Board. He actually served as a, you know, of course, as they, you serve on that board, you become chairman.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, to be able to, you know, at the time, I wasn't able to appreciate a lot of this and understand
right.
it.
Right.
But as I got older and people talked about it and, you know, he talked about it and I had the kind of resistance of that I don't necessarily want to go into business. You know, I had other things that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But
and you've done.
And I've done. And but at the same time, I understood the foundation that was laid in me.
Neat.
And you know, now having my own business, so it's a blessing to be able to know that I had the kind of father that I had.
Yes, and we lost him not a long time ago, only a few. It's been about a
December
month.
December 9th.
December 9th.
Yeah, 2016.
How old was he when he passed?
82.
Wow.
Yeah, 82.
Yeah.
Still a young man.
Yeah. Well, we are lesser off. I like to say that heaven's a little brighter.
Absolutely.
They got the better part of that deal.
Oh, no
but
doubt.
We're fondly remembering not only his achievements as an individual, but I like to tie that in then to how your father and you are examples of people who help us all aspire to better things and who contribute in ways that may cross over financial, you know, economic lines, cross over racial lines or barriers, that cross over age barriers. You know, as an older man, he was still very contributive. And a lot of times I think people will judge based on either age or perhaps gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And decide, that's there's nothing good coming out of that. When I look at your father and I look at your family, and we have things like the Tooks Motel, you know, mm-hmm. and the Tooks building that still has the Tooks name. And that was a cousin of yours.
That's right? Cousin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's the Tooks family.
Right.
I look at not just leaving your name, not just making a mark, but laying a foundation and providing inspiration for the rest of us to say, hey, that was a great thing that was done. Maybe I had to take stock of what I'm doing. What am I doing to contribute?
Right.
Yeah. Folks, we've got Gerald Tooks with us. He's in high demand, so we won't get to keep him forever here. But we want to talk about this award that was granted here just a couple of weeks ago that Gerald received on behalf of his father from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. You stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Gerald Tooks. During the break, we were talking about race relations in Tallahassee, some of the history of this movement toward a more egalitarian environment for all of us. What's your thought?
Well, you know, I think that for the most part, I think that what we have to, when I say we, I mean we as a people, you know, we have to be more open to hearing the other side of the story. You know, kind of if as a black person, you know, I have these feelings of maybe I don't want to call them insecurity or why I see racism, you know, is affecting me, then I need you to understand my point of view. You know, don't just automatically assume, oh, you know, you're calling everything racist. Well, this particular situation may be racist because of the way that it it oppressed me,
right?
You know, and or what I see
or
as being
you
a,
from
exactly
moving forward in
exactly,
the direction you wanted
exactly.
to go.
Yeah. And we, you know, we all have to some degree have felt being oppressed, and even me, you know, because of certain things that I do. I mean, even with the drone, what am I doing with a drone? You know what I mean? How many people do you see that look like me fly a drone, but I'm doing it legally?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
I can just share a quick story with you.
Yeah, please.
I was in Lake City, not Lake City, Live Oak. And this was right after the shooting out in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I feared going to Live Oak.
Really?
Knowing the history of Live Oak. And so when I went there to actually fly a drone in again, imagine a black man flying a drone in Live Oak.
And Live Oak, I take it, not known for its open-armed attitude towards black Americans.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so so I'm out flying, and, you know, everything's going good, and I, you know, I'm on my last shot, and I'm flying for a client. On my last shot, And I'm landing the drone, and the guy in a pickup truck came by and he says, "You know, we shoot those things down over here in Live Oak." And I thought it was kind of strange. And I said, "Well, I have permission to do so." He said, "Yeah, but if you flew it over my property, you know, I'd shoot it down." Now, I could take that several different ways. But I then disarmed him by saying, "Well, you know, if you shoot it down, first of all, I have no business flying over your property without your permission. Mm-hmm. But second, if you shoot it down, that becomes an offense on your behalf." Mm-hmm. And then he sped off, you know, because who am I to tell him what his rights were, mm-hmm. you know? And so you run across those kinds of things where you have to kind of disarm folks.
Yeah. So you come to any situation like that, and there's that at the very least a sort of checkpoint, you know, like, okay, now I'm walking into Live Oak,
right? Right.
A black guy with a drone,
right?
What does that mean? And it's up to you to try to figure that out. And
you have to, and particularly in the times that we live in, where people just aren't trusting of one another. And so you're always kind of looking at a person with a side eye, and, you know.
That level of trust, it seems to me, has never been
right
any better than what it is now. It may actually be better now than it has been in the past. But I think certainly what's happened is we've given license to anybody and everybody to spout off. At any time.
Yeah.
From whatever side of the world
Absolutely.
You're coming from.
Yep.
All you got to do is have a Facebook page, man.
That starts it right there.
And now you're a Pulitzer Prize winning
author.
That's
right. That's right.
And you're going to spew all of this stuff on the rest of us. Oh, Lord. So maybe in a weird sort of way, that's a healthy thing. It's kind of, to me, it's like I have four kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought I was the best dad in the world.
Right.
Right up until the point that my daughter said, "You really suck." I was like, "Huh?" So, but that frankness and that confrontation and that you know, gross honesty was enough to startle me to say, "Now, if I'd been evil, I suppose, in my intentions, or pigheaded, or whatever, unwilling to listen, well, I mean, all the honesty in the world apparently isn't going to help that."
Right.
But that's one of the reasons I like you being here. Because for us who are really wanting to learn and understand,
mm-hmm.
you help us by seeing it from your point of view and seeing it within your own history.
Right.
Seeing it within the eyes that looked at your father.
Yes.
A guy who said, "Man, I ain't got time for nonsense. I got a business to build." And he did it.
And that's what he did. I mean, you know, his focus was on his business. I mean, I used to think, you know, I was a sports guy, you know, played all kinds of sports, and Dad never had time to really go outside and shoot hoops with me,
yeah.
you know, throw the football, but he was always supportive in all of my sports endeavors, and he was always there.
Hmm.
But what I really appreciated about him as a father is his willingness to share his knowledge with anybody.
Hmm.
And you know, my cousins and I talk about this all the time. One of my favorite stories about my dad, when I tell people now about him, is when he first started out in business, he was a little boy, and we would travel around the countryside looking at property. And I was like, "Dad, what are we looking at?" And he said, "Oh, you know, that's a nice piece of property here and this, that, and the other." Didn't have any meaning to me.
Yeah.
By 17, my senior year in high school, he decides that, you know, I can have a car. And, you know, most people at 17, you're lucky to just get the hand-me-down, right? So he actually took me out to, remember the old Chevrolet dealership that used to be on the corner of where the Walgreens is now, John Knox and Monroe Street.
That's right.
I think it was Bill Thomas Chevrolet.
Yeah.
And I'm looking on the lot, and there's this nice silver Chevy Camaro. That's the one that I want.
You have good taste, bro.
I know, right? And
your
so
dad was like, my son has expensive taste.
Yeah, yeah. And so we test drove it, cool. You know, got back in, and dad wrote a check for the car.
Wow.
And I was like, you writing a check? He's mm-hmm. like, yeah. He said, you remember those pieces of property that I was looking at, I carried you at, you know, a few years ago? I was like, yeah. He said, well, you know, because I own property, mm-hmm. I can buy whatever I want.
Interesting.
And you know, when you hear that, you know, mm-hmm. you're thinking, you don't get, maybe not get the connection at first.
Right.
But his whole attitude was ownership of something, ownership of a business.
Yeah.
You know, ownership of land giving you assets.
Yep.
To be able to acquire other assets,
right.
You know, as opposed to creating liabilities.
Right. Well, folks, this is why we have Gerald with us. If you found this moment as inspiring as I have, I trust that it will encourage you to go on and do great things in the manner that we found with Gerald's father and his family. Gerald, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This award was presented by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference here back just a couple of weeks ago, and it was awarded to your father for his leadership role in advancing the vision and dream of Dr. Martin Luther King. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Again. Folks, stay with me. We've got more coming up right after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Glad you're with me. It's been kind of a rainy week. That's an understatement. Flash floods and poor folks over there in Gaston County. So we're dealing with so many upsetting crises all at the same time. The economic impact of this coronavirus, the health threat, and the reorganization, and I would even say the disruption of everyday life. You know, and I mentioned this to you here, I don't know, recently, that there are really several different fronts of this war. There is, of course, the medical, the physical threat of the disease itself, and all that that does in terms of the individuals who are affected by it, infected with it, and the medical personnel then that have to put themselves in harm's way in order to deal with it, and the medical systems that are having to reorganize. We had Dr. Mignon here with us about a month ago or so, talking about what was required of them just to be smart and having to really make this up as they go along. You know, it's like changing the tires on the car while you're going down the highway 60 miles an hour. Yeah, you don't just get to stop and think about this. So they were having to think through pretty quickly in order to maintain safety for everybody involved. Well, like I say, that was better than 2 months ago, back in April, March and April. Here we are in the middle of June. And now we have not only the threat of the disease, we have the public relations battle, because every business, every organization, churches, nonprofits, I'm talking to Steve Boehmer earlier
this week about what their organization is dealing with. Now, he's the head of Leading Age Florida. If you don't know what they do, they're the association for managed care facilities, senior living facilities. And so you can imagine his life has been all lit up dealing with the threat to elderly folks who are living in those residential facilities. The physical threat, again, is ever present, but then comes the perception of the general public. So what are you doing to protect these people? And that then brings in this entire protocol of practices that are CDC, in some part CDC guided, but a lot of it is just coming down from health bureaus, the Florida Health Association and their counterparts at, you know, county and federal levels. So all of these folks that are administrators of and managers of working within these organizations that themselves are governmental, that are having to try to issue a kind of status, a kind of standard. Well, some of that is more about managing, again, perception as to whether or not any one of these facilities has been operating in a manner that is safe and compliant and all that good stuff. So where is the rootedness in that concern? Well, a lot of it has to do with the litigious society that we live in. You know, because you've got the threat then that if someone has been accused of or found to be non-compliant in any fashion, we don't know exactly what that means all the time, because again, this thing is constantly progressing. Oh my goodness, now an organization, a convalescent facility, a managed care facility, facing some massive lawsuit because they didn't follow the proper guidelines. And was that a matter of negligence? Was it a matter of not knowing all the rules? I mean, it gets dicey. So, and without saying that it's not justified because of the magnitude of the threat, but it adds that additional front, that additional layer of concern. Right. And then there's the emotional toll, right? Just the dealing with it as a population, right? And then we bring to the mix the question of racial divide and racism and the business of law enforcement and police action. So played out for us then in living color, all of the conflict, anger, in many respects, just warfare, just an onslaught of not the protesters, but the people who are intended upon and intend to bring damage. They want to damage property. They want to hurt people. And the question being, are those folks operating on our behalf as a society? Are they really saying, look, there are evidences of racial prejudice throughout our history? Or are they saying, we are here to disassemble the status quo, and we're going to replace that with something else? And you're seeing that played out in a few communities around the country, Seattle particularly, being a native, near and dear to my heart. What about Tallahassee? Now, Tallahassee, for its history, no less, as I said to you in the first hour, no less affected by and plagued with racial prejudice and segregation and the institutionalized aspects of that. But what we find here is a constancy among neighborhoods, public officials, community organizations. And you know who comes to mind is Carmen Connors over there, principal at Pineview Elementary, working through the challenges that she faces to bring together the resources she needs to better care for and educate students in her school, where they are underfunded and yet taking it upon herself to try to bring to bear the resources of the local neighborhoods, people in business, black, white, or indifferent, working together to try to improve the lot of the students in those schools. That's what I see happen more often in our town. I don't see people, setting things on fire and pulling statues over. I see people looking for opportunity to invest in one another and acknowledge the problems of our history, acknowledge the remnants of that and the practices that yet remain that need to be reworked. And there needs to be a reassessment of how we solve problems for all of our neighborhoods, all of our communities. That's the Tallahassee that I know.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WhiddonGlass.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Dr. Jerry Parrish is the chief economist and the director of research for the Florida Chamber Foundation. And in that role, he is responsible for conducting in-depth analyses on the Florida economy and on solutions to help secure Florida's future. He is currently an adjunct instructor in the Master's in Applied Economics program, Florida State University, earned his bachelor's in agricultural business and economics from Auburn, master's in business from Bellarmine University, master's of science in economics from University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and his doctorate in economics from Auburn University. Regularly publishes research reports and articles on the Florida economy and Florida's competitiveness. Let's welcome to the show Dr. Jerry Parrish. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Is it frequent for you to bring that sort of inclusive perspective, that broader perspective, the whole story, you might say?
It is. And when I speak to business groups around the state, and not only me, it's my boss, Tony Carvajal, who's the executive vice president of the Chamber Foundation, and his boss, Mark Wilson, who's the CEO of the Florida Chamber. We talk about poverty no matter where we are. And one of the things we show is on the Florida Scorecard, and that's our data website that's free and available to use for everybody. You can find it at www.thefloridascorecard.org. There's not only poverty rates for every single county in this state, and you know, third grade reading scores and all the metrics that are important to our future, you know, it's for every single county, and it's available to where you can click on the website. You can download a chart. You can download the raw data. You know, make your own presentation. But we want all the business leaders around the state to use numbers to see how we're doing on these important metrics. I see that there is a lot of opportunity here in Leon County. But also, one of the things we track on our Florida scorecard is the metrics from the book and the website, How Money Walks. So you can click on the website and see every single county in Florida and where people have moved into and left and gone to, and it's weighted by their adjusted gross income. And you will notice that that Leon County is one of the counties who have a negative number attached to it. But quite honestly, a lot of that is college kids who come here to get educated, and then they leave. The number one place weighted by money is King County, Washington for Leon County. So people move into Seattle, and you can assume that a lot of those are people who have graduated from FSU, you know, maybe FAMU as well. The same phenomenon happens in Alachua County. So Gainesville students at UF are also that way. But you can track where the money is moving to and moving from. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising. There's a lot of people in North Florida from Miami-Dade and Broward counties who may have retired up here or moved up here to take jobs. It's a fascinating look, and you can see that on the floridascorecard.org.
That is a good resource, isn't it, that Florida Scorecard? And your team responsible for creating that. And I think you made mention that if we want to contact Florida Chamber, that actually comes to your email inbox, right?
Exactly.
So if I really want to annoy you, I have a means to do so. Huh?
Well, we get interest in these numbers and people wanting some explanations, further explanations. And
right.
Sometimes they want numbers that aren't on the scorecard, and we're glad to help them. But when you hit that contact us button, it comes directly to my inbox.
Yep.
And I wouldn't want to leave TCC out of it, because they're doing things like one of the things, and I spoke over in Gadsden County recently, one of the things that TCC does is give scholarships to kids from Gadsden County that have a 3.0 grade point average or higher. They get their first year at TCC for free, you know, no tuition.
Wow.
And that's a great program that's helping economic development in this state. And I have to give my, tip my hat to Dr. Jim Murdaugh over there and his board who've come up with that program. I think that's an awesome way to help develop, the counties in this area and give opportunity to kids that may not be able to get it any other way.
And especially Gadsden County, which when we look at it from your vantage point, is even less pleasant, even more disturbing in terms of economics, in terms of household incomes, right?
Well, I think you'll look, and I've done a lot of research on this, and some of it's been misused, to be blunt, but I've done a lot of look at the counties that have, which counties have more jobs now than they did before the recession. And it's a nationwide trend that the rural counties have done less well than the more urban counties. And it's not just in Florida, and it's all over the country. So there's still quite a few counties who have less jobs now than they did before the recession, not just in Florida, but around the country. And that's one of the issues when you don't have a metropolitan area like we do here in Leon County. You take all the rural counties surrounding us, and in a lot of cases, their job growth is substantially slower than it is here in Leon.
Right.
And, of course, the bigger metro areas are doing the best now. So, Orlando and Jacksonville and Miami and Tampa are doing really well. And it's that way all over the U.S. That, when you look at the rural counties, especially in North Florida, but there are also some in South and Central Florida as well, that they're not doing as well as far as terms of job creation and opportunity. I'm going to get a chance to speak at the Apalachicola River Conference here in the next couple of weeks. So that's one of the things I'll be focusing on, you know, the counties that are on both sides of the river. And, you know, they're under that same exact phenomenon that's happening all over the country.
We're talking with Jerry Parrish. He is the chief economist for Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me. Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Parrish, Florida Chamber Foundation, talking about Leon County and Florida's economic health. In addition to some of those more disturbing elements, we'd say, or issues concerning families that are impoverished and remain and seem to be entrenched, or we seem to be struggling to find a way to bridge that gap. And I mean, I know there's a lot of effort, the United Way particularly, and I know that you had a direct hand in developing the ALICE program, right? Alice, no?
I was one of the research team for the Florida report, but I don't want to take credit for developing it.
Oh, come on. I'm sure they wouldn't mind. No. Okay, well, then let's make sure that we understand that you contributed in that capacity. And for those who don't know, this is an asset-limited, income-constrained individual who is employed. So that's the ALICE acronym, Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. And I've said to the folks who were listening before that it's somebody who's landlocked and they can't really make a move in terms of their own income without giving up some benefit that they have via you know, social welfare provisions. You've done a lot of work in that area too.
Right, and not only me, but some of my grad students at FSU have done a lot of work on that, and that really helped me understand it. What I did was, after the student project, I wrote a 16-page report that talks about the fiscal cliffs. And basically, a fiscal cliff is somebody who comes, you know, who is in that situation where a marginal increase in their income makes them lose that social program that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's especially difficult on people who have young kids that are in subsidized child care. That's the biggest cliff that people have to navigate. And so in what my paper wrote about was how that distorts the labor market. And it does all over the state. You know, somebody can't take a raise, they can't take a promotion, or they won't work those extra hours because they know if they do, they'll lose some program, and it'll be, they gain a few dollars by working, you know, a couple hours extra, but they could lose literally thousands of dollars worth of benefits, and it mostly affects young kids. And so, you know, what my paper said is it was written to the business community, and it said, hey, understand that this is happening. It's not fair to business. It's not fair to individuals. And if we could just make a more linear path out of poverty, you know, instead of something that where you're faced with multiple cliffs on the way out, that it would
distort. So it would be incremental. Let's say I take a certain X number of dollars increase in pay, but there's a commensurate then sort of gradual tapering off and not a complete loss of those benefits, right?
Right. The tapering, or the gradual tapering, is what you would want, where people still have incentives to make more money, you know, work more, come back into the workforce even. That gives them the opportunity to make more. And, you know, we all know how expensive it is as business people to retrain someone. What if you lose somebody because they can't, you know, they can't get in the labor force? And you have to retrain somebody. That's a serious cost for business in this state.
I'm going to ask you to do something that economists hate doing, and that is to interpret that from a cultural perspective. Do you think it's our presumption then about this population?
I don't believe that. You know, what I think is, you know, we've gotten a bunch of combination of federal and state programs that, you know, have distorted the labor market. But we have so many people who are willing and able to get out. We just can't trap them in with a big cliff. So I see things, programs that I've seen around town. I've noticed the Capital Area Community Action Agency. And they're getting ahead instead of just getting by. I know that's the wrong name.
I forget now, too. But
it is called the Getting Ahead program.
Right.
And I've seen what they've
done. It's a retraining, basically, isn't it?
It is.
Teaching them how to balance a checkbook.
And exactly. A lot of skills that, you know, maybe they didn't learn, you know, from their parents. And it's just, you know, skills of living, it's social capital, it's matching mentors, you know, who are in the business world with people who are, you know, really trying hard to get out of poverty.
Okay.
And so those things work.
So these cliffs you're talking about are the result of unintended consequences, we'd say.
Right.
So nobody positioned themselves to say, well, these poor people, this is what they're going to need. But we've let that accumulate over time. And like you say, maybe there's a kind of layering of state, county, city, federal provisions, and you end up creating that situation unintentionally for these people who then are in an Alice situation. They're landlocked.
Yeah. Right. And I've heard from employers. I was sitting in a meeting one day, and an employer said, listen, this is how it works in our business. You know, I have people bringing calculators to job interviews, and they will sit there and calculate, you know, what the salary means to them, you know, this new job that they've just been offered, and whether they can still
afford
that job and keep their kids in subsidized child care. That's the biggest thing that we see. So it mostly affects people with young kids. It's not such a big cliff for other groups of people, you know, keep in mind that when these young kids, if they can get a good start to their schooling, you know, really, you know, get moving in school and do well as they go into public school or wherever they go, you know, one of the things we key on is third grade reading scores. You know, kids that fall behind at that point, you know,
not a good thing.
Really hard time. So, you know, what we can do to, you know, make their family life smoother, you know, and keep those kids in some, you know, some good
that
educational situation.
That first 8 years particularly, first 5 years developmentally, but educationally, by third grade, you've got some strong indicators, don't you?
That's why you see on the Florida scorecard, that's one of the key metrics that we track, third grade reading scores.
Okay.
It's on there for every single county.
Interesting.
And it's on there for the state.
Because that's a predictor for you. It's a predictor variable.
It is. And, you know, there's a couple of things, and I've said this in public. you know, you give me about three metrics to show how a county's going to be doing in the future.
Yeah.
I would pick third grade reading scores. I would check, you know, improvements in the poverty rate. And I would also pick, you know, the amount of people, you know, how the job market is doing for yeah. them right now.
Yeah. So level of employment generally.
You know, level yeah. of employment, are they increasing?
Over time, yeah.
Because, you know, there is some momentum there. If you're doing well, yeah. Businesses are more likely to come. And but high school graduation rate is another one. So
yeah.
take those metrics and you know,
there's your future right there.
That will be a big predictor of the future.
Mm. And in that regard, Leon County is doing okay. Could do better.
Leon County, every county could do better. Leon County is really good at high school graduation rate, above the state average. And, you know, we've come up in this state by many, many percentage points.
Yeah.
It's not been that long ago to where we had barely over 50% high school graduation rate. One of the things I ran last year was at the end of the school year, a little metric. In 2017, 37,908 public high school kids did not graduate with their cohort. Mm. And that's a big number. You know, that's nearly 20% because we have just barely
across
Florida.
37,000.
37,908. Mm. And in Leon County, that was 155 kids.
Mm.
And we know some of them will end up graduating or getting the GED.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Leon County's got some really good numbers here, but that's still 155 kids. You know, what's going to happen to them?
Right.
If they don't graduate from high school, on average, they'll make $250,000 less than the kids that do. And Florida runs on sales taxes. Now 78%, number just changed, of our general revenue as a state comes from sales and use taxes. Mm. We need people making as much money as we can get them to make and spending it on taxable goods in Florida, because that's that's more than $1 out of every $4 out of our state budget.
Wow. He is the chief economist for the Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. Dr. Jerry Parrish is our guest. You stay with me. I've got more.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're talking with Jerry Parrish here. He is the chief economist for the Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. So to me, there's been a sort of heartening response to that whole problem from their side. You agree?
I do, and I really have to point out a couple of things. Not just TCC, which I think really are training the people that the market is demanding right now. Mm-hmm. What's been, you know, a couple of things have encouraged me. One is we wrote a report called Florida Jobs 2030. That's mm-hmm. talking about the jobs we're going to need for the future. Mm-hmm. It was sponsored. We got research money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to do this report. And what was, you know, probably the high point of my research career is when all of our Florida college system, our state college, our two-year colleges, have adopted that report and started working their curriculum toward producing those graduates that we say we're going to need. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of these industries is there are entry points in. You don't have to have a college degree to get into these industries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, you know, once you get a high school degree, there's opportunities in. You get a chance to get more training. and move up the ladder in these industries, and there's some really good jobs. Mm-hmm. It's things like advanced manufacturing and just, you know, healthcare. You know, mm-hmm. healthcare is a great need for the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And we see community colleges like Tallahassee Community Colleges doing a great job at responding to the market.
Yeah.
We also see our friends at CareerSource Florida responding to the market, providing training to get people that want to work into a career. You know, one of the big things we see is there's a big, big need for, we call it employability skills. A lot of people call it soft skills. Mm. But this really came out in that Florida Jobs 2030 report.
Going back to what Tim Sender had initiated when he came on board, right? As an example.
Right.
Teaching people how to balance a checkbook.
Yeah, and teaching people how to show up for work and work together with their teammates and solve problems and those employability skills.
Right, right.
You know, a lot of people, fortunately, Florida's got an advantage. You know, we got this monster hospitality industry in this state. You know, what employers that talk to me are finding out is if they need somebody with a technical skill,
right.
it's easier to take somebody who's got really good employability skills, help them get a technical skill.
And train them.
And train them
yep.
than it is the other way around. So our tourism industry has been a great provider of, you know, highly trained people for all the businesses in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And so Florida's actually got an advantage when we look to the future in this metric.
It's that level of personal, I guess you'd say, accountability and self-discipline and that kind of stuff. I brought up Tim Sender because I remember him saying, you know, the biggest challenge for them was to help this individual realize the big differences in blue collar, we'll call it, working class versus a middle income or white collar sort of environment. You know, he said in their world, you dig the ditch, you were asked to dig the ditch, you did it, job is done. But in a professional setting, you wrote the press release, now you have to edit it and resubmit it. And that makes no sense to them whatsoever. Why are you asking me to do this over again? And it's almost insulting. You know, I did the job, well, what's the deal? And he said it's that kind of acculturation that takes time and for people to begin to realize this is how it works here. If you want to stay employed in these kinds of settings, those are examples of the kind of skills you need to have. But that's the time that they may not have if they're working 8-9 hours a day taking care of the kids. So that becomes an additional challenge, doesn't it?
Right. It does. You know, a couple of the really big things that people face are not only child care. You know, that's a big issue. Not only the cost, but getting, you know, the transportation to get their kids to child care and get to work. So when we think about helping people get out of poverty, you cannot overlook the transportation issue. It comes up time and time again. It's one of the big issues in the state. We've just done a project where we've gone around to every single county in the state and done town halls, and it's called Florida 2030. Mm-hmm. This is our strategic plan for the state of Florida. And literally, we've had more than 10,000 people live in rooms, you know, talking about the future of Florida. Transportation's a big issue around the state. Honestly, affordable housing is another issue that people are struggling with in a lot of parts of the state.
Wow.
Not as much here as it is in Central and South Florida. But there's a lot of issues that we're working on, you know, with this project. Mm-hmm. We'll be out with the results of it over the next few months. But I think it'll be something that people will want to read, people will want to pay attention to, because it literally is a privately funded strategic plan for the entire state. And it's something that the Chamber Foundation does about once every 10 years.
Mm.
Yeah, they used to be called the Cornerstone Reports.
I remember
this
that.
One is called Florida 2030.
Okay.
And it'll be out, release it in several different parts over the next several months.
Okay. Now, remind us how we can find those resources, the website again, right?
Yes. The Florida Scorecard you can find at www.thefloridascorecard.org.
Okay. Thefloridascorecard.org.
Right.
Okay. Now, your email address, I don't need to know, because all I have to do is just say contact, and that'll show up in your inbox.
At the bottom of the Florida store card, it says contact us. That means contact Jerry.
And
then
I just need to know, is that going to show up like on your cell phone while you're out there, at, you know, looking at the alligators lakeside, and you're just relaxing, and bing, here comes the email from Brian again.
It does, and it comes in at all hours of the day and night.
This is wonderful. I love this.
But I could turn my phone off, I guess.
Nah, don't do that. Then again, I might not be able to get you to come back if I abuse your kindness. Well, Dr. Jerry Parrish, what a delight and a storehouse of information. And kudos to you for your pursuit of these topics that otherwise I think would remain unknown, certainly, and undiscovered. And I would say, too, in the future, we need to have you back more often. What else you got before you go?
Well, one thing I'm encouraged about, some of the people that are county commissioners were at the chamber breakfast that I was at the other day. And
yes,
they've invited me to help with, along with the United Way, to do a workshop on Tuesday, May the 8th. Looks like the date it's going to be. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
And that's open to the public?
I assume it is. It's open to the public.
Tuesday, May 8th. Okay.
And it'll be something that, you know, it's really encouraging that the county commissioners are really willing also to take a look at this issue, and let's start coming up with some solutions for Leon County.
Practical solutions. Wonderful. Thank you, sir, for your kindness, for your insight, for your pursuit of all those things that we need to know so we can do a better job at caring for this county that is ours, and caring for one another. Dr. Jerry Parrish, our guest, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
That's what I have for you today, my friend. Glad you had a chance to be a part of it. We'll be looking for you again next week. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat right here in Tallahassee. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. I'll be looking for you, so come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.